Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Success Story, the most useful podcast in the world. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. The HubSpot Podcast Network has incredible podcasts like the Gain, Grow, Retain podcast. The podcast is hosted by Jeff Brunsbach and Jay Nathan. Now, Gain, Grow, and Retain is built to inspire SaaS and technology leaders who are facing the day-to-day challenges of scaling. Hosts Jeff and Jay share conversations about growing and scaling subscription businesses with a customer-first approach. If any of these topics sound interesting to you, you're going to like the podcast. Creating more brand advocates, SaaS as a predominant model for business, customer success at scale, or the challenges of integrating new tools with CSM. Some of these topics pique your interest. You're going to love the podcast. You're going to love Gain, Grow, Retain. Go check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, Gain, Grow, Retain on the HubSpot Podcast Network. Today, my guest is Chris Rudigrap. He is the co-founder and CEO of Sendoso, the leading sending platform. Chris has more than a decade of sales experience and has spent time at Talkdesk, Yapstone, and Picora. During that time, he discovered that creating meaningful engagements through direct mail and gifting was an effective way to drive demand and increase sales, which helped inspire the idea for Sendoso. So what did Chris and myself speak about? Well, we spoke about his origin story, how he started Sendoso, why he jumped into entrepreneurship after he quit the game once, at what point did Chris decide to move from working for a company into going full-time entrepreneur. We spoke about some tips and ideas and lessons for launching MVPs. We spoke about how he took Sendoso to market and how he got his first customers. We spoke about at which point should a founder migrate from the sales function to focusing on higher level vision for a company. We also spoke about some sales lessons that Chris has figured out through his career that he implemented at Sendoso and what he means by co-selling. And then lastly, the vision that Chris has for Sendoso and why every entrepreneur has to have a vision and how Chris basically defined his vision for the company. And then lastly, the decision-making process that Chris goes through when deciding what new initiatives to take on and why his decision-making process has been so integral to the success and the growth of his company. So let's jump right into this. This is Chris Rudigrap, the founder and CEO of Sendoso.
So to give you a little context, I'm Chris Rudigrap, the CEO and co-founder of Sendoso. I started Sendoso about 5 years ago. Prior to that, it's been about 10 years in software sales. I got my entrepreneur bug in college, actually. So I started a company called All Student Rentals in college, made it easy for students to find housing, pay their rent online, find roommates, ended up selling that into a company in San Francisco, and then worked my way through a handful of different startups in mostly account executive roles, to where at my last company prior to starting was a company called Talkdesk. And it was there where I was an AE, and you know, I found myself sending out a gazillion emails, but wanting to figure out how I could be a little bit more creative and add some new touch points to my outreach. So I started to write handwritten notes. I'd grab swag from our swag closet and ship it out. I'd even like go on Amazon to find quirky gifts to ship to me. Then I'd ship it back out to the prospect. And all worked really well, but was just intensely time consuming and just kind of hard to do. And so I just dreamed up one day, like, why isn't there a platform that allows me to click and send something? And here we are today. So Sendoso, for those of you who don't know, we are a sending platform. Makes it easy for other companies to send out, you know, direct mail, corporate gifts, handwritten notes, you name it. You can send anything out, part software, part fulfillment centers. And, you know, you can send it out through HubSpot or other tech stack tools you use.
Very cool, man. Okay, so this is like your second iteration of entrepreneurship. So you had one successful venture exit, then you just jumped into corporate AE and now back to Sendoso. So why jump back into entrepreneurship after one exit? Was this something that you've always wanted to do?
Yes. And so I'd say that first exit was mildly successful. Like I wasn't able to buy a yacht or an island or anything. So it was it was a nice taste of success and made me feel good. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, monumental wealth creation. It was also, you know, we were only about 15 employees when we exited. so rather small. And I really felt like I didn't know enough to do it again. I wanted to learn from other entrepreneurs, see how other companies scaled, and being kind of a part of that, but not being the sole purpose responsible for that. So I was kind of a secret entrepreneur in training, so to speak, watching other entrepreneurs and seeing what to do, what not to do. And then kind of in the back of my mind, I was always kind of thinking about what's the big pain point problem that I can solve. And I remember one of the things I used to do, I had this email address. It was 365ideas@gmail.com. And I would, you know, try to train myself to be like, what is the nasty pain that I'm experiencing today? Trying to get in that habit of figuring out what's the biggest next thing that I could start. But it, you know, it took me 8 years per se to land on Sendoso, and that kind of just happened.
So yeah, but so walk me through what just happened means, because I think a lot of people are in roles. A lot of people who listen to this podcast are probably in like SDR, AE roles, and they're like, wow, I wish I could start a company that solves a pain point in my job that I'm already experiencing. But it's not even easy to pinpoint that. So what do you mean by just happened? Was this a side hustle? Did you go get a technical co-founder? Are you a developer? I have no idea how you started Sendoso. So
So you know, I think the point of the 365 ideas mention is that I try to train myself to think about pain points, and I think that's something that's hard enough to do. You know, you go through your day to day, and you might feel it's hard to pinpoint problems that you could solve. So I think, you know, scenario one is how do you get better at problem identification, and then also sleeping on it and not like, you know, 1 hour after you find a problem, like quit your job. It's like, hey, I would, you know, email myself these ideas and check back in like months later and being like, that was dumb, that was dumb, that was dumb. And, you know, so there's a bit of that, I think, is step zero, which is how do you get better at pain point identification? Some people just land on it because they're in a certain industry. And this is, you know, basically how Sendoso got started is I felt the pain of packing boxes, mixing that with like, hey, this could be easier. And then the kind of the aha moment came on. And then that's when I had to go into, okay, how do I start a company mode? And for me, I have a sales background, you know, graduated with a business degree in marketing. But I did know that there's sites and tools out there that can kind of get you to the next step. So actually my first iteration was just drawing my idea for the software to send stuff in on paper, then transferring them online through some mock-up tool. And the original version was actually called coffeesender.com. So that was like MVP version one of Sendoso. And it was really a Salesforce app that I could click a button in Salesforce and send a Starbucks coffee. And there was a digital e-gift. And so that was like, I think mentally entrepreneurs are like, oh, I want to solve this problem. Like, oh, this is too big of a problem. I have no idea where to start. Like, I'm just going to not start because it's overwhelming. So for me, it was like, what's the least overwhelming thing that I could actually do and conceptualize? And so Coffee Sender was that. And, you know, drew up the mockups, found someone on Upwork for $5,000, and found an engineer that could build it for me. And so it cost me $5,000. I got a Salesforce app, a website, and now I've got Coffee Sender going. And for $6, you can buy a credit to send a $5 Starbucks coffee gift card. That was kind of the model. And just told my friends about it. I started using it. Colleagues used it. And pretty quickly, there was tens of thousands of people using it, including, you know, my current co-founder now, Brayden, who was using it and was another AE and was like, this is awesome. I knew him from college. He ended up just kind of using it by way of hearing about it. And then we were drinking beers one day and we're like, we should send more stuff. And then I ended up quitting my job at talk desk to say, okay, I'm going to figure out warehousing and logistics and build that.
I just want to take a second to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Manscaped. I want you to set your New Year's resolution with good intentions. I want you to set a resolution that you can actually keep and join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Now, if you don't know what that is, I'll explain in a second, but if you do, you need to take advantage of our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code 20SUCCESS for 20% off and free shipping. Now, what's Manscaped? Well, Manscaped is the global leader in below-the-waist grooming. So now you can take your below-the-belt grooming to the next level with their Performance Package 4.0 and brand new Ultra Premium Body Wash. In the Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. This is an electric trimmer designed to trim hair on loose skin. And just know that with the Lawnmower 4.0, the advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks to your most delicate parts. It also comes with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light so that you don't mess up when you're trying to clean up for a great 2022. And of course, a grooming routine isn't complete without smelling good. Apply the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver before showing off your 2022 Manscaped self. These unique formulas take care of the smelliest parts of your body, keep you smelling fresh. This is a big boost in confidence that you need in 2022. And to complete the set, Manscaped threw in their Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxer briefs as free gifts, so you keep all those parts stored comfortably wherever you go. And lastly, that new product I mentioned, the Ultra Premium Body Wash from Manscaped, is the perfect addition to your daily grooming routine, but in the shower. I shower every day, and I hope you do too. And body wash smells great, but this is more than just body wash. It's cologne infused with aloe vera and sea salt to keep your skin feeling clean, nice, and moisturized. Kick your discomfort and your poor hygiene to the curb. Use the best tools for the job and get 20% off and free shipping with the code 20SUCCESS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code 20SUCCESS. It's a new year, no pubes in 2022 with Manscaped. What was the point when you actually quit your job to jump into Sendoso full time?
Yeah, so it worked out well where my co-founder Braden, so probably I had Coffee Sender going as like a night and weekend.
By the way, that's project. A really cool, in and of itself, that's such a useful tool for a sales rep.
Yes. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. It was, paying, beer money and then some. So that was kind of the original goal, is just like, can I pay my beer and rent from this? And it was doing hundreds of thousands of dollars in maybe the course of like 6-ish months. Braden, my co-founder, was at a crossroads at his last job that he could quit. And they were already kind of being sold off. So it was like good timing. So he actually quit his job about 3 months prior to me. So he was working on Coffee Center full time while I was like, nah, this is not a $1 billion idea. I can't quit my job. I'm making, $250 and as a sales rep, like, be crazy to quit. Yeah. And then it just started to snowball and I started to see more success with it. And I said, hey, this is my chance. My wife got behind me and said, hey, if you go and create a platform, at the time we didn't know the name was Sendoso, but if you can go build that, like, let's try it. What's the worst that could happen? In my eyes, I was, a rock star AE. I could always go back to being an AE. I could sell anything, in my opinion. I think I had the confidence there. And so I basically just was like, waited till one of the quarters ends. I think quitting in sales is tough because there's always like, I got another deal that's illegal. Like, when can I quit? So I just put a date in the sand and said, all right, it was end of Q3, 2016. And I said, I'm going to quit today. I'm going to quit that date and I'm going to work backwards. And, my CEO at my last company, was also open to that. And he's an advisor now. And, quit that day. Then it got back to square zero where I had no money really coming in. We decided to kill Coffee Sender. And then I had to go back to figuring out, okay, let me sketch up what Sendoso is going to look like. And I spent probably 9 months being a, product engineering person, building infrastructure and new software.
Okay. So 9 months. So what was the day when you actually took Sendoso to market? What was the MVP of Sendoso? Like, 'cause you actually had like a pre MVP. So yep. What was the first launch of Sendoso?
Yeah, so that was about the summer of 2017, and we had a platform where you could log in, create a user, set a user up with some budget. We had a myriad of different things that you could send on demand. We had all the gift cards, so not just Starbucks, but any gift card. And then we had our first warehouse was in Chinatown in Las Vegas. And so we had this little warehouse, probably the size of a bedroom. And we turned the lights on and said, hey, anyone could sign up. You know, we'll source stuff for you. We have some stuff available on demand, and or you can send us swag that you have in your office to our warehouse. We'll organize it, put it online for you so you can virtually see what inventory you have left. And then you can click a button in Salesforce and HubSpot. We had Marketo. We had a couple other integrations. And you can, you know, I think SalesLoft and Outreach. We had kind of hacky integrations with them before they even knew what an integration was. So we were like their first integration partners because we had built this like Chrome extension that put a button in their platform and it overlaid it. And so they were getting like support and customer success questions about Sedoso. And that ended up driving us to be one of the first launch partners on stage at both their conferences like two or so years ago.
That's awesome. So you forced their hand to build out this.
Yeah, integration. I mean, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what are some MVP lessons that you could talk to the audience about that you experienced? You had the first MVP, then you sort of had like another Sendoso MVP. Was it too early? Was it too late? Was it just right? What are some things people should think about?
Yeah. So one of the things that I did is there's a ton of ideas that we got that I had, that my co-founder had, that we started to get from customers. So we really wanted to like, what is the best product we can get out that will work? And then let's backlog all the other features and come back to them. And we constantly were like taking out things. So it was like, what's the best thing we could ever build? And then let's take out everything that, you know, is going to take time and effort and delay us from launching. So I think some entrepreneurs will kind of feature creep and add a million things and like, let's just get something there that we can start getting customer feedback on. So I think that was important, is just like, you know, drawing a line in the sand and going for it. I think with...
You do that a lot, by the way. That's smart.
Yeah.
It's very smart. Yeah.
So that was big. I think, you know, ultimately we then need to figure out, you know, from an MVP perspective, you know, for us, we were in, you know, an outsourced model in the beginning where so it was like, how do we conceptually budget for this? And so we had kind of like, what's the MVP and then how are we going to start budgeting hours thereafter? So I know some co-founders will have an engineer where there's maybe not that hard cost, but if you find a outsourced agency to help you, you know, we budgeting was an important part of the early days. So we didn't go through all of our money because we were bootstrapped. We were using our own money and some of the money from the Coffee Sender project. So I think budgeting in the early days for engineering specs. So I think those are my lessons was really get something in the market. And then you got to kind of test, you know, besides product market fit, like what's the pricing model and how does that fit? And start to build on that to then getting to a place where you can test to see if you could even like hire salespeople and have a sales, you know, a CAC to LTV ratio or, you know, can you hire SDRs? Do you have, you know, what's your price point to afford that as part of your CAC? So, then it became less about focus on product market fit and more of like go-to-market fit.
I just want to take a second to thank the sponsor of today's episode, Athletic Greens. Now, I'm super happy that I partnered with Athletic Greens because I literally use them every single day. Now, I've known about Athletic Greens for a little bit only because I tried them about 2 years ago, way before they decided to sponsor the show. And I noticed that in winters, when I didn't take Athletic Greens, I would get sick as a dog. When I did take Athletic Greens, I wouldn't get sick at all. So it turns out that when you take one scoop of Athletic Greens, you're taking and absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. So this is incredible for your immune system. And the special blend of all of these ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, your recovery, your focus, your aging. So I take it one scoop every single morning. It's lifestyle friendly, meaning whether or not you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, it's going to fit that diet, which is important for me because sometimes I like to go a little bit low carb. If you're already taking a multivitamin, This can completely replace that. It's important to choose a high quality vitamin with ingredients that your body will actually absorb. Athletic Greens definitely takes care of that. And it's way cheaper than actually getting all the different vitamins, supplements, ingredients if you're going to buy them separately. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/success. That's right. That's a special URL they put together just for Success Story podcast listeners. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/success to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Okay. So as you're, just to describe some terms, so customer acquisition cost, CAC, and then your LTV is lifetime value. And then if you aren't in sales, if you're not in the sales arena, the SDR, sales development rep, and all these things are just important metrics for success as you're taking a product to market. So you were trying to remove as many features that weren't mission critical as possible. You figured out not only product market fit, but go-to-market fit. I think that's the term you use, which is, I like that a lot. Okay, so how did you scale up? And Sendoso was, you mentioned potentially hiring SDR, so it's not pure SaaS play. You obviously have some sort of mid or enterprise market play as well. So how did you first sell Sendoso to the market?
Yeah, so my co-founder and I, both being in sales, just immediately started reaching out to prospects. So it was like, okay, let's build our target list, let's enrich that list, and let's outbound to that list. We, did your typical multi-touch outbound and got meetings, demos, and closed customers. And so we, our pricing model was a SaaS annual subscription. In the very beginning, for the first couple of months, it was a month-to-month. We quickly realized that we needed to go annual. We also, were able to kind of up our prices after a few months too, as we realized we were significantly underpriced. We also had the benefit of hiring like a really awesome COO early on. She was like one of our first investors turned employee. So she was analyzing like, okay, you're selling this way too cheap. You're not going to be able to afford, to scale. And so once we kind of right-sized pricing and, we realized that we could outbound and get meetings and close deals, we then said, okay, let's hire a couple ADs and a couple SDRs and see if we can have other people who are not the founders sell. And then that was like,
once a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. Once that started working, then I think it was more like we knew we had something, because then you can figure out formulas thereafter to pour fuel on the fire, which is ultimately, raising venture capital. So then you can hire people ahead of, profits and then scale out faster.
At what point do you think in a company should you migrate the sales function from the founder to a sales team?
I think as early as possible, to be honest. Well, I'd say it in two parts. One is founders should always be selling. So I still sell today. But as soon as you can in the early days, I think it's important to realize that someone else, you need to, in order to be successful, you need to figure out if another human can get in there and actually sell the product and in a way that, founders are overly passionate. They'll do anything. You might not even get paid as a founder. And so like, of course you can get a customer for a cheap amount of money and you're not paying yourself. And, that you're talking to, your ex-colleague's boss, like you hack together your first couple dozen customers. And I think it's important to hack those together, because then you have customer feedback, you have maybe some case studies, you have some references. But as soon as you checkbox all of those things, you need to immediately hire, in my eyes, SDRs and AEs to prove that you can have a sales model.
And I just want to, and I also want to understand, because we didn't even really, we kind of touched on the pain point that Sendoso solves, but I want to like double down on that, because obviously you having a lot of experience as an account executive and using basically manually sending out items as part of the sales process, you have probably a fairly significant understanding of what's broken in sales and why people should even bother. I should have touched on this at the beginning. I apologize. But why people should even bother using physical items as part of an outbound sales campaign? Because not every team this is not like status quo. This is not that every team does this either. And I think that's an important thing to chat about too. So let's even talk about like a couple sales lessons that you learned that Sendoso is solving for, that you've probably implemented as an AE, that you're using as your probably, I'm assuming, your own team is using to scale Sendoso.
Yeah, 100%. We use Sendoso more than anyone. So I think as an AE, you know, some of the areas that are even true today was that, you know, you have to think about this kind of buyer experience and kind of multi-touch ways to get in contact with somebody, you know, and that involves, you know, email, phone call, SMS, video, LinkedIn, you know, direct mail, Sendoso gifts, you know, everything that you can do to get in front of somebody, you know, is going to help you better your chances. And I think it's a semi numbers game in that regards, where it's like, what's the optimal way that you can get somebody to talk to you and break through the noise. And if you're only doing email, then you're missing out. If you're only doing email and social, you're missing out. So once you incorporate, you know, Sendoso in, it gives you just another shot on goal, and sales is all about, you know, as many shots on goals as you can. That being said, I think the other thing that we're seeing in sales is just the evolution and advancements of just tech in general and automation and everything else. And so one of the things that I believe Sendoso does well is it helps reps be more creative too. And I think creativity is one of those soft skills that doesn't get talked about a lot, but, you know, can help differentiate you from another competitor with a similar product, in that, can you build better rapport with that prospect? Can you send them something more unique that is memorable, and, you know, they choose you, the person, not, you know, the company product. So I think that's also becoming ever more true, in that, you know, maybe 10 years ago, when I was in sales, even before outreach and sales left, I was one of the first like Yesware and Tout App users. And like, that was like a secret weapon for me. It was like, oh, I can automate things like no one else can. But, and so
now it's over automated.
Yeah. And so now it's like, okay, let's take a step backwards and like, how do we humanize the sales process and personalize. And so that's one of the inspirations for starting Sendoso.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, ExpressVPN. Now, I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't I just go incognito mode? Well, let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you delete your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why even when I'm at home, I never go online without ExpressVPN. And it doesn't matter who your internet service provider is, ISPs in the US can legally sell your information to ad companies. So what is ExpressVPN? Well, ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so that your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. When I'm using ExpressVPN, I can't even tell that it's on. It runs seamlessly in the background, and it is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap a button and you're protected. And what's great is it's available on all your devices. So your phone, your computer, even your smart TV. There's really no excuse for you not to be using it. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that was rated number one by Business Insider. Visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/success story. And you can get 3 months free with a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/success story. expressvpn.com/success story to learn more. And how do you track the ROI on, because say I'm a VP sales CRO, yep. I want to send these gifts, but I need to make sure that I'm tracking the ROI on sending this dollar value item. So do you have, for example, metrics or case, even like a story you can tell? Stories are great. You know, the ROI on sending a certain dollar value item to a customer, are these things opened more often? All the things that a digital marketer would think through, or you know, when you track like a traditional sales campaign, that you can easily check open rates, click-through rates, conversion rates.
Yeah. So I'd say one for specific like case studies and exact data points, we've got like 50 case studies on our website. So check it out there if you want to read into the specific details. Yeah. But at a high level, sure. You know, you're correct. Like digital marketer, we kind of take that offline kind of black box what's happening and turn it into more of like a digital marketing channel. So whenever anything's sent, it automatically tracks back to, you know, HubSpot, Salesforce. So now there's a paper trail, which previously really wasn't there. You know, when I was back in the day packing my own box, I wasn't like logging tasks in Salesforce. It was another extra effort. So now everything's automatically tracked. That data then can, with attribution modeling, can see if it's last touch or whatever attribution you use, weighted average attribution, you can start to see, okay, we sent them this, and then 2 days later an opportunity was created. And so you can start putting the puzzle pieces together that way and track ROI. There's also ROI of like, if I'm doing this myself back when I was in sales, like, okay, I'm going to spend 2 hours of my day doing this. Should I be packing boxes and sourcing things, or should I be selling? And so there's an ROI of like the time of that rep, which is, you know, super crucial time you can't get back. And then, you know, there's other ROI in that, you know, we kind of have a Costco model in terms of we can buy a bulk and pass those costs along to our customers. So we can buy things, ship things way cheaper than you could individually. So there's an overall ROI on just like the costs of goods and services.
Amazing. Okay. And a couple other things that I hear you speak about often that I thought would be good lessons to teach over. You speak about co-selling with CEOs often. Mm-hmm. Walk me through that. And what's the strategy for that if you're trying to sell to, I guess, mid or enterprise?
Yeah. So given my sales background, I think I've never stopped selling. Even though as a CEO, you have to do a million things. I think whatever I can help our SDR or AE team, I am all about that. And so I'm really trying to empower my team to think about co-selling. And so that could be the AE working with me, and then I will then reach out and collaborate with executives at that prospect. I have a huge advisor network. There's about 100 plus advisors. And so, you know, our AE SDR or even our account management team can leverage me to then use one of our advisors to help break into account. So that's useful. And so I think more than ever, I'm involved in deals and especially kind of the enterprise ones.
You kind of just, the theme that you keep coming back to is like the CE should never stop being engaged or involved in the sales process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With that too, yeah. I mean, outside of just the sales process, I think you're kind of always selling even to customers or learning from customers or expanding customers. And so, you know, earlier this year, I did a 95 customer virtual roadshow. Last year, I did about the same. And the year before, I was in person, which I was only able to get to maybe 20 or 30. But this year, because it was virtual, I met with 95 of our customers for about a half hour each and learned a lot there and was, you know, learning and getting feedback, but also selling, you know, where's the expansion opportunities, you know, where are other areas that we can, you know, help our customers use our platform and grow more.
And how do you use that feedback for your business, your sales process, your product?
Yeah. So, you know, basically I'll take a ton of notes. I'll record the call and transcribe and take notes. And after each one, you know, put together things that I can then say, hey, this information is useful for our product and design team. This information is useful for our product marketing team. This information is useful for our, you know, AE team or our expansion team. And so basically just trying to then action item it out. And so that, you know, different departments can learn from each customer interaction.
Is that something that permeates your culture? Meaning, does every executive on your team build a feedback loop into their particular business unit?
I would say others join me or others are doing this more the customer facing functions, like our, maybe our CTO is not in doing as many customer roadshows as I am. But I think like I have my unique background in wanting to talk to customers, being in sales, you know, building the product puts me at a really perfect place for, you know, talking product, talking expansion, talking use case, talking, you know, customer success. And then I can kind of distill that out.
Okay. And that's obviously, you know, led to some measure of success. So where is Sendoso today in terms of as a company, what are your, you can talk figures, not specific revenue numbers. Like what is your vision for the company and how long do you think it's going to take you to get there?
Yeah. So just kind of size. So we've about 450 employees. We've raised about $55 million in funding. We'll see this year about $100 million spent on our platform, and we'll you know, be in kind of the 20-30 million range in terms of ARR. So just going to give you some points there.
Yeah.
We see this being a huge, you know, a multi-billion dollar public company one day. And so we're just getting started.
That's amazing, man. First of all, congratulations. I didn't realize that you were that large. It's very, very impressive. And, and when you, I was going to, you know, just for you, this is like your first, it's your first like very large entrepreneurial success, even though like you're like every single time that you come up to bat, like you're killing it. Like you never strike out with startups so far, which is actually not normal. So that's a good thing.
Well, I'd say I've definitely incubated different ideas in my brain that I just pulled the plug on. So I think that's helped me in my efforts in that, you know, I just didn't like jump into something just because it was my first idea.
Yeah, it's actually, I love that that incubation idea and that 365 idea thing that you were doing. I think that's very smart because I think it just like qualifies out a ton of really shitty ideas that you would have had to have tried and failed and spent a lot of money and time. And for you, what is your strategy process, future growth, steering the ship, decision-making process as you grow Sendoso? Do you have a specific framework that you follow? Is it mentorship? Is it, what is it?
I think it's a mix of a lot of things. I think it's one, it's, you know, a mix of, you know, having a vision that people can get behind, you know, OKRs and, you know, in ways that you can track the success of the company going forward. It's, you know, always thinking about company culture and making us the best fun place to work. You know, always trying to hire and inspire and grow the team as, you know, kind of people are the foundation for everything. So, you know, and I think it's, you know, hard work, but I think about it as like a marathon, not a sprint. So you've also got to, you know, live life, but you know, this is going to be a long game.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, HubSpot. Now, you may have heard me speak about leveling up in the past, how we can level up our careers, our businesses, our customer experience. I wanted to take a minute and focus on that last one, because when we level up our customers' experiences, we transform our customers into evangelists and help our business and our careers grow like crazy. With new features dedicated to helping your sales teams improve your customer experience, HubSpot is on a mission to help millions of companies grow better, starting with yours. Conversation intelligence tools help your teams get real-time insights into calls with automatic recording, transcription, and call analysis. With more visibility into customer conversations, coaching, and customer feedback becomes that much easier. Easy share meeting links let customers see availability and book meetings for you, all from the HubSpot platform. This cuts out endless cycles of scheduling email. Learn more about how you can transform your customer experience with a HubSpot CRM platform at HubSpot.com. And how have you managed COVID? Were you already fully virtual before, or was that something you had to figure out?
So we weren't fully virtual before, but we did have three offices, which when we were a 50-person company, we were already having three different offices in three different locations. And so that already drove more collaboration than probably most companies when there are 50 employees all in the same office. So we already had collaboration and, you know, Zoom and everything else in our blood. So when we as we scaled, I think we hit COVID, we were about 150 employees. So we've actually grown pretty substantially, maybe added about 300 people since COVID started. But we already had, you know, remote collaboration in our blood. So it was not too hard for us to then just fully go remote. We also kind of day one, our executive teams and investors kind of put our heads together. And so for the first couple weeks or month, there was more rigor around what the heck is this? How are we going to survive this? But then we saw some big tailwinds from it. And we are actually a solution that benefited from COVID in terms of like people remote. How do you send things to people? All these field sales reps are now inside. How do they build rapport with prospects? How do we do these field events that are now all digital? How do we onboard new employees with swag? So, you know, we definitely quickly started creating content and thought leadership and features for our product that benefited from what everyone was facing.
And in terms of the future, question for future of the industry, future of sales, are there any things that you see that are interesting you in how we sell and how we communicate with customers that are going to trend in the next, say, 5 years that are different than now?
I'd say the biggest thing is just there's just going to be an onslaught of technology that salespeople will use. I think if you look back 10 years ago, it was like, oh, I use Salesforce. That's like the one tool I use. Like, oh, maybe you use, maybe you're early adopter and you use a Yesware Tout app, or maybe you use like a, you know, a Zoom Info or something, like you were maybe lucky to do that. And so now I think there'll be, you know, if you look into the next 5 years, there might be, you know, 50 tools a salesperson could use. And you really have to take that as a competitive advantage and figure out how are you as an SDR, an AE, or an AM, like, good at using technology and learning it and, you know, mastering it. I tried to master Salesforce 10 years ago, and I could run reports and find leads that no one else was working. And like, that was some of my secret sauce. But like, now how do you use all these other tools? So I think that's one, is just the onslaught of tools and being good at using them. And then I think two is some of those soft skills that, you know, automation, you know, can't, you know, really control, which like creativity and, some of those areas of, you know, skills that you build as a salesperson will be ever more important.
And I guess I want to do a rapid fire just to pull some career insights from you. But sure. One last question that I wanted to ask, one question that you would ask somebody who's in your position now when you were starting out in sales.
I would probably ask like, maybe draw me your org chart. Like, what is your, I think it's really interesting to see, you know, from a company from zero people to now 450, how your org chart grows and what are all these different roles you need to hire for and when. And, that's been something that's been, unique to learn. And so I think like that would be a question that would be like, you know, really interesting to understand.
And then also, where would people reach out to you if they want to connect with you, Sendoso? What's your favorite social or email or website?
Yeah, you can always find more information on Sendoso on Sendoso.com. You can email me personally, Chris. It's KRIS@Sendoso.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to chat. Love talking with other entrepreneurs, AEs, you know, happy to get pitched a new, you know, cool tech software that someone's come up with. Love hearing about the newest things.
Awesome, man. Okay. What was the biggest challenge that you overcame in your journey, and how did you overcome it?
Probably the biggest thing was really just making that jump from having hundreds of thousands of dollars going into my bank account to zero, and quitting my job. I think as an AE, there's always more money to be had, like the next week, the next deal close. And so I just had to say, F it. I'm going to, you know, going to make zero money, and hopefully the longer term I'll make, you know, way more.
That's like psychologically, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's very tough. And all, you know, I didn't mention this before, but you know, whenever you leave a company, like, you know, that there's going to be like a battle for commissions that are going to be paid out like in like 6 months, you know what I mean?
So totally. That's
all right. If you had one person, there's probably been a few, but if you had one person who had a major impact on your life, who was it, and what did they teach you?
Yeah, so I would say one of the most impactful things that I remember was an entrepreneur in Chico. His name was Chris Friedland. He started a company called Build.com. And when I had my startup at when I was in school at Chico State University, he was very inspirational, and seeing his success, like talking to someone in a, you know, in his office at a company that was doing hundreds of millions in revenue, and was like, wow, I could be him, kind of thing. And so I think that was an area that was very inspiring me to then, you know, see that I could do this one day.
Very good. Very good. If you could tell your 20-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Buy Bitcoin.
That's my answer all the time. Don't worry about working anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. No, I'd probably just say like, do what you're doing. I feel like back when I was 20, I still had the mindset of like, I want to become an entrepreneur. I want to go big. Like, you know, startups are cool. Like, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to have fun. And so I think I wouldn't change my mindset or anything.
Okay, cool. And then a source, it could be a book, could be a podcast you'd recommend people go check out that you've enjoyed.
Yeah, I've got a couple podcasts I love. I love Snacks Daily. I love Acquired, How I Built This. Those are kind of my favorite ones.
Awesome. And then most important question, or last question rather, not most important, but last question. What does success mean to you?
I think success is happiness. You know, if you're happy, then you're successful. And, you know, for me, happiness comes with starting a company and, you know, being successful that way. But, you know, for, an SDR listening, it might be hitting your meeting goals for the week, and that's success. So I think for me, happiness and what makes you happy. If you're not happy hitting your goals, then you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Very good, man. Very good. I love that. Okay. That's it. That's all I got.
Cool.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Just a quick question. Have you ever had one of those oh no moments when you realize that you accidentally deleted a huge file? Or worse, your whole computer dies. I know I have. It's happened to me a lot, but don't sweat it. The sponsor of today's episode, Backblaze, they have your back. It is unlimited backups for all your Macs, your PCs, or even your whole company, and it's really affordable, under $100 a year. If you're running a business, they take the stress out of protecting everyone's data. If you need more bells and whistles for compliance, so on and so forth, they have enterprise options too. Honestly, losing data sucks, but Backblaze makes getting it back easy. They have restored billions of files. They offer tons of restore options, including rapid recovery in an event of data loss or ransomware. And you can access your backed up data from everywhere and anywhere in the world using their web app, iOS, or Android apps. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5Mac, and tons more. And best, you can try it fully featured with no risk at backblaze.com/story. They set up that link for all Success Story podcast listeners. That is a no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/story. Seriously, back up your stuff. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.